Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody out there in quarantine. Welcome to another episode of Broadway Breakdown, My Obsession. I am one half of your hosts, Matt Koplik, your other host, John Miscavige, and I got into a fight. It was very dramatic, very brutal, but it was from miles and miles away because we are doing social distancing. With me, though, today is one of the wonderful cast members of Hades Town, Mr. John Krause. Hello, John.
Hello.
Thanks. Did I say your last name correctly?
Yeah, Krause.
Krause, fantastic.
A lot of people, it looks similar. I mean, it looks easy enough for me to digest, but that's because it's been my thing, it's been my last name forever. But I get Cruz, I get Krause, but Krause, that was perfect.
Fantastic, thank you. And I know exactly what it's like to have your last name get royally butchered. Koplik does not roll off the tongue for some people.
Right.
Welcome to the pod, John. How are you doing today?
Doing well, you know, all things considered. It's a beautiful day here in Southern California.
That's right, in California.
Spat, yeah, we just got over a spat of a few days of rain, but it's like Molly and I, my wife, have been remarking on how clear it is. And, you know, there's all these pictures from, you know, like the canals in Venice, which I don't know. There's also like, I don't know if that's true, if there's actually dolphins there. There's some like misreporting there maybe.
Yeah.
But it really is like, you know, like, the world is getting a little cleaner, it feels like. And I can say I can attest that there's always a layer of smog in LA, and I feel like it's all but dissipated with all the like the traffic that's not there anymore and like less air travel and everything. And I can see the mountains from my window, and it's like I see them in HD. It's like I can see all the little rivets and the valleys. It's just so bizarre.
Are you from LA originally?
I am. I grew up here.
Oh, fantastic. I didn't know. I don't know many people who did that. Well, except for your wife.
I keep hearing that Molly and I are unicorns. They're like, whoa, you were born and raised there and you live there. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. It's the same thing with me in New York. I have, you know, my New York friends and I, we all grew up here, and people are like, oh, you're such unicorns. I'm like, I can name you a dozen people who grew up here and still live here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, LA is a weird town, I find, because you guys need water and like rain so much, and yet when it does rain, like your city's not really designed for it.
It's like, I know. No one knows how to drive in the rain. It's so true. Everyone's like either going too fast or too slow. Mm-hmm. Either they're like trying to get out of it, or they're like, let's be very cautious, 10 and 2. And I don't know. I feel like I know how to drive in it now that I've lived here, but maybe I'm a terrible driver and I just don't know.
Well, have you driven in New York City now?
I have, but I don't have a car there, but I've like rented a car to go, you know, upstate or go to Connecticut or something.
What was the biggest social change for you going from LA to New York?
So I kind of went, you know, I went to school in Boston.
Where'd you go?
I went to Boston Conservatory.
Oh, I went to Emerson. Okay.
No way.
Yes, I did.
I was deciding between both schools. Did you graduate 2012?
I did indeed.
Wow. We were there in 4 years.
Yeah. You chose right of the two of us, because of the two people on this pod, guys, one of us is in Hades Town. Just saying.
Of the two of us, who has their own podcast?
That is true. I do have that on you. So thank you.
Yes, you do. Yes. You're welcome. I think transitioning from LA, which is all spread out and being near the beach and you know, everything's drivable, but you have kind of your own space, and then being in like a big city where there's a lot of college kids and there's a subway line that's not obviously as extensive as New York is, but that's how I would mainly get around because I didn't have a car there either. Mm-hmm. So I kind of got like, I dipped my toe into the city transit lifestyle in Boston. But yeah, the biggest, I think, culture shock was just the amount of people, the sheer amount of like, I think as artists and as actors more specifically, we're just so fascinated by people. And to be walking down the street in New York and seeing hundreds of people and being like, what's your life? What's your life like? Where are you going? What's up? Like, that's what I would always think when I was on the freeway driving. I'm like, where are they going to? What do they do for work? You know? Mm-hmm. And I'm just seeing all these people on the street in New York. I'm like, what? How are we all here? What are we all doing?
But in New York, if you go up to people and ask them that, they're like, get the fuck out of my way.
You're scaring me. You're scaring me. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. How did Hadestown come about for you?
So I was actually, you know, this is my Broadway debut. Well, that's kind of another weird question mark spot. I vacation swung at Fun Home.
It
was amazing. But it was 3 weeks of my life, and it was in a year where I had maybe seven weeks of employment in as an actor, and three mm-hmm. of them were
That's Fun Home.
In the Tony Award winning musical.
Yeah. Did you get to go on?
No. So it was literally like, you know, it's such a small cast, and the guy mm-hmm. who played Roy and others, Joel Perez, he was just taking his first vacation. And so the understudy played him for the week. It was just 1 week. Mm-hmm. I rehearsed the part for 2 weeks and sat backstage for a week. But I had like a little insert in the playbill, and I kept them, and I got it signed by everyone. And like, it was a great moment for me, but it was 3 weeks in an otherwise pretty unemployed year.
Yeah.
Which is a very strange, you know, just actor thing. And the other thing I did that year was like a reading, but that was only two mm-hmm. or 3 weeks.
So that was, so Fun Home then was technically your first Broadway show, but Hadestown is your actual debut.
It's my debut. It was my onstage debut. It was my first Broadway bow, you know, like those mm-hmm. big things. And I still like at the Gypsy, at the Legacy Robe mm-hmm. Ceremony, I was, you know, when they have all the debuts come from center and take pictures, I was a part of that because it was.
Yeah. And that was just like through your agent or whatever, like went in and got the part, or was there like a connection to it in any way beforehand?
For Fun Home or for Hadestown?
For Hadestown.
For Hadestown. So Hadestown was, I was in LA. I just come off of tour with Wicked, and I was kind of.
You're just like listing all the things I love right now. Fun Home, Wicked. Wait, next thing you're going to tell me is that you did Smile somewhere in California, and I will like love you forever. What is Smile? Wife, Molly McCook, should know Smile because A, it was a Stage Door Manor staple. Oh, also guys, I know John's wife. I know John's wife. It was a staple at Stage Door, and I'm pretty sure I had told her once in her life that she needed to play the girl who sings Disneyland. The song Disneyland is from Smile.
Okay, I've heard that song.
But so, Hadestown, finished Wicked Tour.
I was in LA, and when I was on tour, I saw that they'd done that off-Broadway production, mm-hmm. and I had listened to that album. I had been a fan of Anais' music since 2012 when I was on my first tour ever, and I was listening to Spotify had just become a thing, and I was listening to Bon Iver a lot. He was also becoming very big in 2012, and Bon Iver, whose real name is Justin Vernon, sang the Orpheus part on the Hadestown concept album.
Yes.
Back in 2010. So it said like, if you like Justin Vernon, you may also like mm-hmm. Anais Mitchell. So I listened to her music, fell in love with her lyricism, and her music and her poetry, and I listened to that album. I was like, this could be a musical, but like, is, you know, they're turning big jukebox things into musicals. Will they take this kind of, you know, indie artist? Mm-hmm. Will this ever happen? And then I heard the rumblings, you know, throughout the years, and then I saw that got a production, and I was like, I told my agents, if there's anything I can do to be in this show, like, please, 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 please. And I was in LA, and they said, you can't put yourself on tape because the first thing is a dance call. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, I'm never going to be in the show. Because if they're looking for dance, like to do a dance call first, that means mm-hmm. like this is going to be heavily like a dance show, at least for the ensemble. Mm-hmm. And I knew that the parts, the leads were already cast. So, but I was like, okay, I'll go in, like, I'll do it. I flew out and I went in and I made it through the first round of cuts and I had a call back the next day. And then they were like, we're going to cast this next week. Like, we're going to be done casting. So I had a call back the next day and then I had another call back the next week. And I was staying with, I had an apartment there, but I had a subletter. So I was staying like on the couch. And I just stayed there for like a week and a half. And at the end of it, they're like, okay, it was like around Christmas. They're like, we're all going on Christmas break. This is going to be cast by the 22nd. And it was like December like 16th or something at the time. And I flew back to LA and was home for the holidays and nothing happened. And I was like, okay, I guess that ship sailed. And then I got a call January 6th to come back in because it's just such a difficult show to have for coverage because there's so many different parts. And at one point I was auditioning for just the standby of Orpheus. Then I was auditioning for the swing. And then I was auditioning for eventually my part, which is ensemble / understudy Orpheus. Mm-hmm. And that last call, I flew back to New York and I got it.
That is awesome. For a second, when I thought you were going to say January 6th, they called to tell you. I'm like, oh yeah, it was a theater people December 22nd. Like yeah, right, that's right. A loose December 22nd.
Yeah, very loose. It's not like film where you're pinned and then you're in costume and wardrobe the next day.
What is one of the biggest moments in your time with Hadestown so far that, like, if you were to look back and be like, that's the defining moment of my time in the show so far?
Wow.
Yeah, I ask big questions.
It's really deep. Mm. I just have to say it was the whole Tony experience. Because I grew up watching it. Even before I was like super in love with theater, we would watch the Tony Awards because my parents would take me to theater here and there growing up, like when I was like 8, 9, 10. And I loved it, but it wasn't like, I want to do that. I didn't have that experience of like watching it, you know, and like falling in love immediately. I loved it, but I wasn't drawn to it in the way until I actually did it.
Yeah.
So I'd say, but I was always like, I want to perform on the Tony someday. I really hope I get the opportunity. Cause there's some people who like, you know, get their Broadway show or whatever. And it's either they don't get to go to the Tonys or they get a show that's already been, you know, and the fact that I hit that milestone, and the day it was pretty surreal, but you know, you wake up at 5 a.m. to get there at 6 a.m. to do this like dry run. Mm-hmm. And then you do your show, an actual matinee. Then I remember like taking a quick nap and getting on a bus and going and doing this live show. And in the opening number that we all got to be a part of too. So it wasn't just our like Hadestown little production number. We all got, you know, everyone got
to the opening bit as well. Yeah.
With James Corden. And one of our fates like opened her fan and it flew out in the live telecast over James Corden. And I knew we were in the beginning of the number and I knew there was so many people coming back and forth and like turns and lifts and leaps. And I was like, if someone trips on this thing in live TV, what's going to, and so it was right in front of me and I ran 3 steps, grabbed it and ran off stage. And you can catch it in the telecast view.
Well, now I will do so. Not that I need an excuse to go onto YouTube and watch Tony Awards clips, but now I actually have one.
Billy, I beg to differ with you.
How do you mean?
You're the top.
Yeah.
You're a Coolidge dollar.
Moving along to the real meat of this episode.
The meat and potatoes.
John has an obsession. What is your obsession today, John?
Guys, I can't stop thinking about Cats.
The movie. Yes.
Be specific.
The movie. So were you exposed to Cats, the show, before you had seen the movie?
You know, I've never seen the show. So let's say that. There's a little asterisk here that's like, I have nothing to compare it to.
Other than
I've seen a few clips. Like I've seen the real Magical Mr. Mistopheles. I've seen Mr. Mistopheles, the one that's really bad. That like, have you seen that?
No.
It's like from a community theater production and it's just, you know.
That is, terrible. I will look that up as well. I've got a lot of YouTubing to do after this episode.
You have to, absolutely. And I've heard the Jellicle song. Mm-hmm. Some of these songs will finally make sense when I see this movie. And just more question marks.
Oh yeah. So, okay. When did you first see the movie? When it came out?
No. So I wanted to see it and I wanted to see it in theaters, but I didn't see it until this quarantine.
Oh, okay.
They released it for digital release. And I was like, and you could only buy it. And I was like, we're buying it.
So how many times have you seen it now since you first saw that one? Or is it just like just the once and it's burned in your brain?
It's burned in my brain. I watched part of it again just to like re-up, you know, for this podcast. Mm-hmm. But I was so enamored the entire time because I'd heard all of the terrible things said about it. And part of me, and I know this isn't a popular opinion, but I'm like, is it kind of brilliant?
I'm going to go out on a limb and say no.
No, it is bad. It is objectively terrible. But the commitment from all of the actors, that's what I'm like, and the dancers, it's so, like, how do you make sense of that's what makes a Gumby cat? You're like, how do you make sense of it? And I was like, oh, he has an intention. He has, there's something going on and he's thinking. He's
like, yeah, okay, no, yes and no, yes and no. On paper, I'm like, absolutely, John. And also, like, clearly she got her BFA. She knows all about intention and character development and all that bullshit. And yes, I'm all for that.
Thank you.
Cats is a different alien. And I will get into that with you as well. There's also, I don't know if you're familiar with the YouTube channel of Lindsay Ellis.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. She's like a film girl / theater girl. Mm-hmm. And she does all these like video essays. She's done a bunch on movie musicals. And two of my personal favorites are she like gets progressively drunker as she talks about the Phantom of the Opera movie. Mm. And then like eviscerates the Beauty and the Beast remake, which like I'm glad someone did. She does one about cats. And it's both about like why the show is weird, but also kind of works and why the movie doesn't really work. Like the movie works in the way you say. And like...
Right.
You watch it and you're like, huh? But it's it doesn't actually work. What is a moment that sticks out to you about the film when we like just talk about it at this very moment?
Yeah, I kept wanting answers. Questions kept happening. It felt like Lost. Did you ever watch Lost?
No, but I am currently watching Grey's Anatomy, so I feel you on those ABC dramas.
Sure, thank you. I feel like Lost was amazing at it kind of setting up questions and then giving you a taste of the answer, but you always want more. You're like, where are these polar bears from? What's the smoke monster? I feel like that will make sense if you ever watch Lost. But I feel like that's how I felt during Cats. I was like, okay, the answers are coming. Mm-hmm. And that's what kept me interested. I was like, it'll get there. Like the magic will be explained. McCavity being able to like appear and like put people on a ship. That'll all come together. And it didn't. So that's the first part that I'm like, at the end, I was like, wait, okay. So still so many more question marks. The first moment, I mean, when they were like, I kept trying to find the answers as I was going. I was like, okay, the Jellicle thing, they're introducing themselves. They're like, we're the Jellicle things and Jellicle cats, and this is who we are. And they're like showing her around and like, come with us. And then at the end of the song, they're like, we're scared, bye. And you're like, wait, there was 10 minutes of storytelling in this crazy ass song, and then it's all done.
Yeah. Okay. I'm getting so frustrated. So I also wrote so many things down as I was watching it last night.
Yes.
So, okay. So, blah, 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 blah. Let's do a little background for a quick second.
Yes.
For those of you who don't know, and if you don't know Cats or like of Cats, you're really listening to the wrong podcast.
Yeah, why are you even here?
I mean, it's probably like your LA friends from high school who like, I don't know, the one time you did sports, they're listening to this podcast.
Right.
I'm projecting a lot onto you. So Cats is a musical written by Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber based off of a book of poems of old possum, something like that, by T.S. Eliot. And it's virtually plotless. The musical ran forever. But I had seen the musical when it was on Broadway. So like I have history with Cats, unlike John here.
There's a reason it ran for years.
Yeah, well, so yes. Yes, there is a reason. It's not the best reason, but there's a reason. I actually do enjoy a lot of the music in Cats. Mm-hmm. Like I was very into it when I was a kid, and there was a certain sense of wonder and magic about the show. I was obsessed with the VHS growing up because there was a movie of the stage show, which is what you were referring to earlier.
Yes.
When you said like the good Mr. Mistopheles.
Right.
Yeah. And then I saw it right before it closed on Broadway, and I gotta tell you, like, I love me some Wicked. I love me some Harry Potter. I have never seen spectacle like the original Cats in my entire life. Like that, and that theater was gutted and like designed to look like a junkyard, and everything was detailed and elaborate. And when Grisabella goes to the Heaviside layer, I remember, so they floated up on a tire, a giant tire, and it went out over the audience, and then the fucking ceiling of the theater split open and a giant claw came out and she went up into the ceiling, and 10-year-old me fell out of my fucking chair.
Wow. Yeah.
So like it was that sense of just theatricality and wonder.
Sure.
The movie, Tom Hooper, the director, decided to just like all these questions, all these like internet questions about Cats the stage show, he's like, we'll answer them in the movie. And thus, as you said, like provided even more questions.
Right.
So he's like, why is everyone hating Grisabella? And in the movie, it's like, oh, well, she went off with McCavity. I'm like, but what happened then? Like
the prostitute question?
Yeah. She's like kind of the prostitute cat, but like then
she's in the finer things, who knows?
Yeah. And in the stage show, McCavity's like always hinted at, but never really seen until act two when he kidnaps Deuteronomy. In the movie, Idris Elba, because he's a celebrity, pops up every like 10 minutes just to be like, yeah. Honestly, one of my favorite moments in the entire movie is when he kidnaps Ian McKellen. And as Ian McKellen disappears, you hear an echo of McCavity. It's like, it's like trails away. McCavity.
The mic. Yeah, absolutely drifting. Production value on this podcast is second to none.
Oh yeah. Also, guys, no judgment on any audio quality you hear. I'm doing my very first episode with Zoom today, and John has been a wonderful guinea pig so far. Which also means that if something fucks up audio wise and we end up having to re-record, you can't be mad at me, John.
Okay.
You're not allowed to be mad.
Can't be mad. Okay.
Can't be mad at Matt. Okay. So you mentioned, we're going to go into this bit by bit.
Yeah.
Because as I said, I wrote notes. The opening scene, first of all, when I first saw this movie, the moment it started, I turned to my friend and I said, oh, this is wrong. Like the opening shot, I said, this is wrong.
Like throwing of the cats in the bag. Like,
yeah.
Who, I mean, violent, but who does that?
Well, then I have questions. I was like, why? Like, if it was like a really violent cat or diseased cat, maybe. But she opens the cat and it's beautiful little white Victoria.
Yeah.
I'm like, what did, and now I have more questions. Like, what did Victoria do?
Yeah, what did she do?
What did she do? Or like, what happened with her owner to make her owner like dispose of her in such a brutal way?
Just like a quick toss.
Yeah, like a big toss in a bag. This is all during the overture, by the way. And like all the cats are like circling around the bag with a cat in it, and they open it up and she comes out and she's also a cat, and they look at her like they've never seen a cat before.
Right. They're like, what's this thing?
Yeah. And I guess you could say, if you want to be like defending the movie, which I don't know how you stand on
this. There should be a fair amount of. I think we should have, you know, a little
sure. Bit. Yeah, no, I'm happy to like defend it in some ways as well.
Yes.
You could argue that they're like, are you a Jellicle cat? And that's why they're like very, John and I also both did like a shoulder shrug on that. Are you a Jellicle cat? And you could argue that that's what their looks are.
You could argue it.
But I also love that they go into the Jellicle songs, Jellicle cats, and every lyric. So the lyrics are all questions like, when you fall on your head, do you land on your feet? Familiar with candle, with book, and with bell. And they literally act out every single lyric.
Right.
Which is like, sure, like film is supposed to be a show us, don't tell us kind of thing.
Sure.
But at the same time, it's literally, it's every single lyric.
Every lyric. Point. And it's the longest song on earth, maybe.
Which is, it is. But like, they weirdly also, they shortened it for the movie, but I guess because nothing happens. Oh, and that's the other thing about Cats, guys. Nothing happens.
Right.
Nothing happens.
Nothing truly happens.
No, the general gist is that it's a bunch of felines who are like, one of us is going to get to be reborn in one of our 9 lives.
Right.
And it's going to be 2 hours of you hanging out with us till we figure out who that is.
You're just going to meet the different kinds of us.
And the movie like decides that, okay, only the cats that have a song about themselves are like choosing to be a candidate to, you know, get sacrificed.
Sure.
Which, like, I don't know, I'm getting very frustrated. I wrote all these questions down. Wait, because they decide with McCavity in the film. So like McCavity, who's like not a villain in the show really, but is a villain. Right. and is much more of a villain in the movie. He like kidnaps all the cats that are like choosing to be candidates to go to get reborn so he can be reborn. But then like you have to, they, you then ask the question, like, why are you choosing to be reborn? Like, what is so awful about your current life that you need a new life?
Right.
So, like Rebel Wilson, she's like, I need to get out of this kitchen. And I'm like, oh, is life so terrible being domesticated? And like, right. James Corden,
do what you want.
Yeah. And James Corden's like, they don't even explain why he wants to get reborn. And McCavity's like, I need a new life. I'm like, why? Your current one's pretty badass. You got magical powers.
Yeah. And you're like ripped as hell. Like, you're a strong cat.
Yeah, you're to put it bluntly, you are Idris Elba.
Does this guy not know he's Idris Elba?
That's I yeah. I feel like they should have included you and I, CGI'd us into the movie, and just like gone up to each cat and like, are you aware that you're Idris Elba? Are you aware that you're Taylor Swift?
Like for those two Muppets who are just like, oh, in the booth, like, this is crap.
That's what I need. I need a cut of Cats where it's the old men from the Muppets just commenting the entire time.
Yeah, absolutely.
But see, now all the questions are popping up. I'm getting very emotional.
You.
I'm like, because literally, John, I wrote it all down. I'm showing it to John right now. Like all the questions that I have, just like scrolled on my phone.
It just begets more questions.
Okay. So in the show, there's no one's like a candidate. They're all candidates, essentially. Like,
right.
It's not up to them. They don't get to choose. It's just Deuteronomy.
Well, Deuteronomy, right.
Yeah. But in the movie, they're like trying to justify all the decisions and all the songs and all the story points. Mm-hmm. So they're like, oh no, only the cats that have a song are candidates. But then, as I said earlier, like then you have to justify why their life is so terrible. And like none of their lives are that terrible except for clearly Grisabella.
Right.
Who is played by Oscar winner Jennifer Hudson, who?
Lest we forget that
she is an Oscar winner.
Yes, right.
There are Oscar winners and nominees in this movie. I've also been like ranting for a long time, and this is your obsession. So like, give me your questions. What are questions you have?
So when you asked what, like the first moment, like obviously every moment is like, this is wrong, this is bizarre. Mm-hmm. But when Jennifer Hudson, Oscar winner, not just nominee, she won.
She won one, yeah.
She did win. She has it in her home somewhere. She sings a little bit of her song, like a little tease of memory. Oh,
I know exactly what you're
like,
saying.
No, get out. And she's like, okay, I'm going to crawl on all fours.
Mm-hmm.
On her knees. But we've established in this world, like, we can dance and we can be on our feet and we can be cats and be normal like that. And then she's like, oh, okay. I'll slink away into the shadows on my fucking hands and knees.
That's the thing. You said it because it's all about how you like establish the world, I guess. So like, and we'll get to the finale as well, because that's another like rule breaker they did. Like they established the world and then all of a sudden Judi Dench addresses the camera for 7 minutes.
Right.
But Jennifer Hudson, she comes on screen, she's standing on her own 2 feet, sings for a solid 3 minutes on her own 2 feet. And then she goes, first she does like a giant hiss at everybody.
Yeah.
And God bless her, she commits with like tears in her eyes.
She's giving another Academy Award nominated performance.
Or so she thought. And there are some performances on film where you can just tell the actor in front of the camera is like, ugh, Oscar's gonna eat this up. It's like a full Jenna Maroney in 30 Rock moment. It's like, the Oscars love this. And, but she like, as she walks away, she eventually then gets on her hands and knees and crawls. And it's a complete like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah, because yes, you're cats, but like it feels almost like Tom Hooper was making this movie. Goes, well, in real life, cats go on their hands and knees, and in real life, cats slurp milk.
It makes me wonder about the cat consultant. Was it just Tom, or was they? I feel like they hired someone. They were like, this is a feline way of movement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had a whole week or so of probably pre-pro in a rehearsal space, working just dedicated to being a cat.
First, that John's from LA when he calls it pre-pro.
Thank you.
So that's pre-production for all of you
For all of you, please.
No, T-Swift said like they went to cat school, and I'm like, that's
absolutely certain. Yeah, of course.
But you also like, I don't know. I feel like you know that.
Who's the dean of cat school? I want to know. I'll talk to the principal.
It's Garfield.
Garfield
is the dean of cat school.
For me to shout, for he will do as he did.
Oh my god. Okay, so we're gonna have to keep going like in order of the film. So yes, those questions you said. I'm so happy you brought up the J-HUD crawling on her hands and knees. I mentioned everyone's horny. Oh, this is something that bothers me about the two Tom Hooper movie musicals that exist, because he also did the Les Mis film, for anyone who doesn't know. And the whole thing about the Les Mis film is how it was all sung live and it was all very gritty realism. And that has a double-edged swordness to it. That's not the proper way to say that, but I said it. So, like, musicals are not realistic, right? I'm assuming, John, you don't go out into the street and sing to strangers, "Wait for me, I'm coming."
They told me not to.
Copyright. And, you know, you're not, like, the lamp in your home right now, I'm assuming you're not swinging around in a choreographed fashion.
True. That would be correct.
So I get mad when they're like, well, it's all very, it's a gritty realism in this musical. I'm like, the fact that they're singing in three-part harmony immediately doesn't make it realistic. You have to heighten everything to match that stuff.
Yeah.
So like
double-edged swordness.
Yeah. So like them doing like breathy live vocals in Cats, I'm just like, why are you trying to add gritty realism to dancing fucking cats?
They're CGI'd with their ears and like, that's not going to help us come in more.
Did you notice this with the sound editing or sound mixing? Sorry, pre-pro sound mixing. Where in group numbers, whether it's Mr. Mistopheles or Jellicle Cats, everyone's singing, and then the camera will cut to like one cat, and their voice will be louder than everyone else's for that one line, and then go away. Yeah.
Well, did you hear Jason Derulo's like high tenor part in some?
His counter tenor in Mr. Mistopheles. Wait, no, please do a little bit of that. Please do it.
Yeah. Like fully just him. You're just like, wait, no one else is blending. He's above everyone.
If it seems like we're all over the place, it's because the movie is. And
there's no through line.
No, it makes two eloquent theatrical men. I'm going to use plural men there, even though I don't consider myself much of a man. and turns us into bumbling, I don't know what.
We're just exasperated by the fact that this is a real thing that was a lot of money with massive... Okay, so aside from the stars who are all, you know, different and from different walks of the entertainment industry, there are three, if you include Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber, three either sirs or... dames that are involved in this. People who have been knighted.
Yeah.
Like
the number of Oscar winners, Tony winners, knight, damehoods, the hundreds of people, John, that had to sign off on every decision made in this film is what truly astounds me.
Yes.
Truly.
I think they were probably halfway through and they were like so many millions in. They were like, I don't know. Like, it's probably going to be bad, but we have to keep going.
Yeah. Are you familiar with 30 Rock?
Yes.
Okay, fantastic. Hopefully this reference speaks to you. There's an episode where Jack talks about how it's when GE is like going under and he doesn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. He's like, the only way out is to go deeper. He's like, so I will crawl lower to get GE back to where it's supposed to be. And I was like, I wonder if Universal was like looking at the dailies and they went, well, I guess the only way to get out of this is to just commit harder.
Keep going.
Keep going.
Harder.
Throw more money in it.
There was a lot of ads. There were a lot of posters. Like,
We'll commit harder. Give T Swift a uniboob. I literally wrote as one of my notes, McCavity. I don't. That was literally a note I wrote.
I don't. Do you remember what part of the movie that was in?
I think it was his beginning. It was like his entrance and just like talking to Victoria
with his like Dick Tracy hat.
Yeah. First of all, you gay with your Dick Tracy reference. How dare you? I mean, you and Molly should do a Dick Tracy Halloween. She'd be a good Breathless Mahoney.
That's not a bad idea.
You're welcome.
Oh, thank you.
Just tag me on Instagram when you do it. I also wrote in caps, exposition, dialogue, no place in this damn show. So like all the, that's the other thing. The stage show has so much music. It's wall-to-wall music, right?
Yeah.
The movie, like, if you're going to have dialogue, don't give me silence behind it. You need to give me music because it just highlights how much more ridiculous everything is.
Right.
when it's like they're doing Jellicle Cats and then it cuts away and as you said, everybody runs away. And then it's like, there's just silence.
Quiet.
And Idris Elba just comes out. He goes, they say Macavity is very dangerous. What?
Really flawless Idris Elba, actually.
Thank you. Well, I didn't feel super comfortable trying to imitate him, so I figured I would go as bad as I could.
But I feel like he's like, I know this is weird. He's like, I know this is not going to be a highlight of my career.
No.
So he kind of overdoes it, like, especially when he's like, it's me at the end, and he's like, pick me, and he's puffing his chest. Like, that is so over the top musical theater, like, of the likes of which we haven't seen in this whole movie.
Yeah.
Everyone, like I said before, everyone's investing so hard, not like in a musical theater way, like of like a projecting. And in that moment, which I guess you could argue that he is projecting a lot because he's trying to be chosen.
Yeah.
But there's a twinkle in his eye. He's like, this is, I'm he's doing like, a lot.
He's like, I'm not so sure about the result of this film, so I'm going to make it memorable. That's sort of like Minnie Driver in the Phantom film. Have you seen the Phantom film?
I haven't, but I have seen Phantom on Broadway.
Which is beautiful. The movie, Minnie Driver, is like very clearly knowing what this movie is going to look like. And so she just camps the fuck out of it.
Yeah.
Like, she knows gays are going to imitate her performance for years to come.
Signora, these things do happen.
For the past 3 years, these things do happen. I didn't stop these things from happening. This thing does not happen.
Why are the mice children, John? Why do you think that is?
Why are the, when the mice started dancing and then the cockroaches, I know that's part of the show. I know that's part of the
thing. Sort of. Yeah. We're talking about the Gumby Cat song, Rebel Wilson song, where she's a domesticated cat. Sorry, to give context to what we're talking about.
But also Rebel Wilson shtick is her thing and it's working for her. I did not need it in this. Like all of her comedic asides after her songs, you know, and they were just like, you know, I'd say that, insert cat pun here. Mm-hmm. You know, there's just like all these cat puns that
quit milking it. She says, quit milking it.
If we could just have like, as a part of this, you know, in the comment section or something, just all of her one-liners, just so we can all be on the same page. Cause you know, like they were just like, just riff on it. And she was like, all right, I'll just do my thing, do my Rebel Wilson thing. And like, it was funny, but it was also like, I don't need this anymore. But yes, why are they children? Because Tom Hooper would thought, wouldn't this be cute?
Wouldn't it be cute? It's,
I think that's the only thought.
I guess, except, okay, going back to like the realism thing, when you watched this, did you notice that like anytime the cats interacted with the mice, and I use the word interacted loosely, because the cats did not ever really acknowledge the mice, or that the mice had feelings or thoughts or could speak. They just like use them as props, which is, you know, what cats do with mice. But anytime they did, you would hear like the mouse child like plead for its life, falling off of Mistopheles, saying ow, and like running away. Like it just makes it all the more terrifying. Like Rum Tum Tugger is also, you're getting a lot of emails.
I know, I'm so sorry.
You should be. Now, just in case that sound effect pops up in the audio, I want everyone to know John's popular. I'm not. Like Rum Tum Tugger, Jason Derulo like picks up a mouse as he's singing, but Tom Hooper had like the brilliant idea in post to have like the child, and John knows what I mean by post, right?
Yes.
Great. You know about post.
I'm from LA.
You're from LA. You know all about post. To like have the child mouse be like, no, please don't do it. And then like Rum Tum Tugger throws him away again, like a prop. And then also you just hear like, thanks, Tugger. And he runs away. And then Mistopheles.
Yeah, it was ADR, which is another term.
Another term.
And these kids came in. They were like, what do you want for us today, Tom? And he's like, I want you to say, thanks, Tugger. And then they put it in the video, in the movie.
And just like it's
not well done.
Yes, another Oscar for Tom Hooper. And in Mistopheles' number, when he picks up his hat, and there are mice under it, it's supposed to be like a big magic trick.
Right.
Do you remember this?
Yes.
So okay, but don't stop yelling at me. I don't remember.
I'm just excited.
You are yelling. The mice fall. Like one of the mice falls off his head. and hits his shoulder, like the person who jumps off the Titanic and hits the propeller on the way down. This mouse jumps off of Mephistopheles' head, hits his shoulder, and hits the ground. And it's not enough that all happens, but in ADR, that child is like, wah, ow, wah, ow, run away! Like, literally does that, says all that shit. And it's like, while the song is also happening. So I feel like Tom Hooper was like, oh, wouldn't this be a fun Easter egg if anybody like heard it? And it's like, no, it's loud enough to hear. Why?
Right, and like, wait, are we supposed to follow that? Or, the song's still happening. Am I missing anything? That was the other thing. I was trying to listen so intently to the lyrics to be like, am I missing anything? And the answer is an unequivocal no.
No.
In every song.
No. You know who would not have approved of all that ADR just so that way we knew where to pay attention to? Rachel Chafkin.
Exactly.
She'd be like, this is Mephistopheles' song. We don't need any background noise.
A master of focus.
Yes. I'm laughing, but it's actually true. I'm laughing. I'm just laughing thinking about the mice.
Thanks,
Tucker. I'm gonna start saying that to people when they do like favors for me.
Thanks,
I'm like,
Tucker.
Yeah, sure, I'll do that. I'll go, thanks, Tucker.
And people will be like, can you stop doing that?
Oh, I'm gonna lose all my friends. I'm not against movie musicals not having a button on songs because it adds into like the flow of going from song to scene. So like I actually do like at the end of the opening number when they're all like Jellicle songs, Jellicle cats, Jellicle, you know what I'm talking about? And right. Victoria, she's like joining in at the end and then she does like the last line a cappella. And but again, as you said, like why are all the cats running away? So like story wise, I was questioning it. But right. I did like filmic wise that song had no button because it could like bleed into the next scene. And there were other things that did that. However, they would then have like silence for 10 seconds. So I'm like, it might as well be a button.
Right. Just put it in there, especially after Jason Derulo's song, which is so fun. Mm-hmm. It's so upbeat. And then it's like over and you're like, silence.
Silence.
And you just feel uncomfortable. You're like, do I clap?
Mm-hmm.
I was on my couch like, do I? I don't know. Who is this for?
You asked the ultimate question of today's episode. Who is this for?
Where?
Say that again for me, please, John.
Who is this for?
Thank you.
And this has been addressed in other, in probably countless articles and other media, but like, who is the milk bar for? Is it for humans? Or is it for the cats?
Well, I ask you this as well. What if this is a human world, which we are made to believe as we see part of a human, and all the things are supposed to be like to scale of human stuff, why is everything a cat pun? Absolutely everything.
Everything.
Also, why are the humans searching for McCavity? Because McCavity has wanted posters all over.
Right. And you know what? This is me trying to think too heavy, but I thought the heavy side layer was like you getting, people think it's cool, but the heavy side layer is actually you get brought to a pound or something. Because the wanted posters, I thought were like, we're going to get them and take them to the pound or wherever and get euthanized. I was like, that's the heavy side layer. I thought that would be a brilliant twist, but no, it's you just ascend to the heavens in a balloon. That's the, what?
I am.
Stop it.
That idea actually took all the wind out of me. I'm obsessed with that idea. I actually, if I ever like were to go to grad school for directing or something like that, I have an idea for the most like high concept production of Cats ever, which is that it's simply an insane asylum. Like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, insane asylum. None of them are cats. They're all just patients who are obsessed with cats. Cats all over the walls. McCavity is like Nurse Ratched who comes in and like give them their tranquilizer pills.
Yes.
And then the heavy side layer is just that they like legitimately kill Grisabella. They like hang her from the ceiling. And then the rest of the show is just like they have to sing this final song that Judi Dench sings in the movie. Like they have to sing to the audience while Grisabella is just like swinging. Just swinging.
It's dark. Yeah.
I mean, but it makes about as much sense as an... What?
It might make more sense.
I would say it makes as much sense as a milk bar for humans.
Sure. It does.
Well, I guess... Did milk bars actually exist? Do those exist?
And also, what time period?
That's a wonderful question as well. I'm
because the neon feels could be contemporary, but neon's been around since I don't know the 20s.
I'm assuming it's like the 1930s.
Okay, that would check out too, because the car,
and also I'm gonna say, I mean, I'm gay, but I was like, from the shoe of the woman. No. I'm assuming this is the 30s. The car, the shoe, and like,
sure,
the, like, poster art of the West End. It's, I'm like, this is not 1910, and they also talk about Queen Victoria a lot, but
that's true.
Yeah, so I mean, truly, John, I don't.
Why ask the question?
Why ask the question when you can simply be befuddled?
Look, what about Dame Judi Dench's coat?
And we made of fur.
Hands. We have to talk about her hands.
How they're just pure human hands?
Pure human hands with like rings.
Yeah, full-blown rings.
Full-blown rings on her hand, when everyone else has CGI'd fur up until their fingers.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, her coat made of fur. But also, her performance is stunning.
I mean, she's Judi Dench.
She can't really do any wrong.
Judi Dench could literally read an autopsy result to me, and I'm like, award. Awards.
Give it to her.
Give them all to her. But yeah, no, that's the other thing about logic in this film. And it's not, I would never ask anyone to put logic to Cats, except that this film tries to bring logic to it and thus opens a whole wormhole of questions.
Yes.
Why does Judi Dench have a coat made of fur? Why does McCavity have a coat made of fur? Or Rum Tum Tugger? Why does Rebel Wilson zip off her skin to reveal new skin?
Oh, God, I forgot about that part.
Oh, how could you forget? That has haunted my dreams.
It's haunting, yeah, because it's like, it's a nightmare. I don't want to think about it.
It's all of a sudden became Silence of the Lambs.
Also, like, there were so many, there was clearly, obviously, a lot of ideas. And they tried to make them all work, but, and this is, I would try to justify, like, each cat has a different dance style. Like, why are, like, twins doing their hip-hop thing? And I was like, you're not setting up the world where everyone has a different dance style for different cats. It's all ballet or like jazz contemporary, some ballet, jazz, and contemporary. And then there's just these two that do hip hop because they're lay twins.
You have a lot of opinions about dance for someone who almost didn't get through the dance call at Hadestown, I'm assuming.
Well, I went to a college that has a dance program, so I was well versed in.
Yes. So I agree with you. I've, do you know Emily Maltby?
Yes.
Okay, because Molly knows her.
I know Charlotte Maltby. Sorry.
Charlotte Maltby, yes. Emily is Charlotte's sister. Emily just choreographed Evita at City Center.
Oh, cool. Wow.
And she came on the pod, and we talked about that. We talked about dance and like how it expresses character and feeling and plot and yada, yada. And you really kind of have to establish the vocabulary in your show. Like, does everyone speak the same dance language? Do some people maybe like have a characteristic quirk about it? This film is just like literally whatever in the moment.
Literally whatever. That should have been the tagline. Cats, literally whatever.
Cats, literally whatever. That could be another tagline for this episode. Because like you got Victoria doing like full-on royal ballet, and then right after her are those twins who do like pop and lock and break dancing, and it's not fluid. It's just so disjointed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, as someone who has danced on Broadway on a three-part turntable, how does dance affect Hadestown in your eyes?
My favorite thing about dance in Hadestown is that it is all motivated by intention, and the dance is like most of it I would just call movement. Like when we're underground, we're not dancing. It's this movement that is supposed to be physical labor. So like it is dance because it is to counts, but very clearly sometimes we're indicating like we're breaking rocks, we're pulling a rope. Like it's very clear what that is. And sometimes it's a little more like we're doing these kind of things that look like we're maybe measuring something. But it's all linked to like an action and furthering the plot of like what is going on in Hadestown. But then the like most dancey part is living it up on top. And that is pure celebratory dance, and it's made to look like it's just an improv dance break. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's a dance break in the traditional sense, and there's 8 bars of this, and you know, it kind of grows from just one person dancing to 3 people dancing to 5 people dancing, because it's like anything, like the dance floor starts and then it starts to grow, and it's all thought out in a way that feels communal. You know, it's not just like, and now we dance because it's Broadway. Mm-hmm. It's like we're celebrating that the wine is here and we're celebrating life and you know, spring is returning. So it's like, it's half like tribal rain dance and half just celebratory, you know, reunion.
Yeah.
It's all grounded in storytelling and in like, I don't want to say reality, but it's grounded in
the character's reality.
Yes, the character's reality, exactly.
Yes, and Cats does not do that, which like, okay, sorry. So I need to also say, first of all, so many things that you and I just like tangented about in the first 15 minutes that made no sense, I realized like are all in my notes. So, like I literally have in caps so much silence. I have the cat puns, ... Jesus. I said one of the female cats totally slays, and I know who I'm talking about, but I don't know who she plays.
Right, no, there's these two female cats who are the kind of counterparts to Munkustrap and Rumtum Tugger.
Yeah, I guess. Or like Mistopheles.
They don't really get really named, but they're just like, sup, girl. They're fierce.
That is their motive, I guess. Their subconscious. I don't know. What's the word I'm looking for? I don't know. Like it's like their character statement every time they're on screen. Like they don't say it, but it's their subtext. It's their subtext.
Sure, subtext. Yeah.
Those two girl cats. They come on. I'm like, hey, girl.
Yeah. They're like, we're a little judgy.
Little judgy, but it's the cat got your tongue girls. that's who they are. What's your name?
Cat
oh my god, so many the Jesus cat puns. Every time McCavity uses his powers to make someone disappear, he does meow.
Yes. Because he's a cat. Unless you forget
he's a cat. But he does, I'm pretty sure it's not even a meow with an M. I'm pretty sure it's a meow with an N. Idris Elba is like, listen, I'm an actor and I need to do the my choice, the one you don't expect.
Unexpected choice. Because people are coming to see Cats and I'm going to give them one more, something a little extra.
I really do wish this was a visual pod because I need our listeners to see every time you just leave me speechless. Like, I'm not just like sitting here judging, like I'm actually crying laughing because you've rendered me speechless. It's quite a thing. I have everyone just comes, C-U-M-S, at the end of the Jellicle Ball.
Well, is that after the catnip?
No, it's before the catnip.
Yeah, okay.
The catnip is round two,
right.
Which I have questions about that as well. We'll get to her.
That's not in the show, right? That's not in the stage show, is it?
The catnip bit? No. McCavity is, so the two Hey Girl cats are the ones that usually sing McCavity in the show.
Oh, no. Okay.
It's not like his, yeah. McCavity like doesn't.
She's not this like ballroom queen.
Yeah, they're just, yeah, I don't know anymore. My brain is turned to scrambled eggs. The Jellicle Ball is when they all just dance for like 7 minutes in the theater. And okay. Judi Dench just sits there. She's like, go for it. Do you remember talking about?
Is anybody always a woman? No, right?
No, it's usually a man.
A man, right. That's what I thought.
It's in the past, it's usually played by a big black man. So now in the film, it's played by an old white lady.
British woman.
In true Hollywood fashion. They take the part for the old black man and turn into the old white lady. Oof. But at least it's Judi Dench. But
at the very least.
Yes. But no, the Jellicle Ball is literally when they all just dance for 7 minutes.
Okay.
And it ends, and there's pure silence, and they all just go.
Jellicle Ball an orgy?
Kind of, yeah. I know some people who did the show on Broadway, and they were like, yeah, it's kind of an orgy. Because the show is sexual, too. Totally. Like, they're all horny cats in the show as well.
They're very horny. You can tell.
But the show, it's subtext. Like, the cast knows that it's an orgy, but they don't really play it as an orgy. They play it as a dance.
Right.
The movie, Tom Hooper takes that subtext, and he brings it right to the forefront.
He's like, you're all going to come.
Yeah, everyone's going to come except the audience.
But we're going to try and get them to come. Can we talk about, as a place, the ship where they all go?
The shippy barge on the Thames.
Who is that guy? Who's the guy who's like, I'll look after them, McCavity? He's like this, who they make walk the plank at the end? Who is he? Is he in the movie? I mean, in the show?
So, okay, you're not, okay. I'm about to be very embarrassed about how well I know the show. So, like, just shut up with your judgment right now that you're about to have. In the show, so the way that the show usually works is that the intermission happens after the first memory. Right. The one where in the movie, it's J-Hud on the street, like probably drunk, doing her I dreamed a dream cut, like snot down the nose, cameras up her nostrils. And then after that, it's end of act one. And then act two begins with, it actually begins with the song Judi Dench sings in the windowsill, which mm-hmm. I don't even know how it goes. It's just, I blank out every time that song happens. Then Gus happens.
Okay.
And Gus in the original show, Gus does like a flashback. Sorry, does a flashback musical number called Growl Tiger's Last Stand. And it's a full 10 to 15 minute operetta.
Right.
Separate from the show. Then they come back and he's like, well, that's what I used to do in my youth anyway, like 15 minutes later. But the name of the character is Growl Tiger. And so in the movie, they cut the operetta, but they kept the name and they made McCavity's cohort named Growl Tiger. So no, that character is not in the show, but the name is. Did I just blow your mind with my in-depth knowledge?
I don't know why. I need to look up the Gus the Theater Cat lyrics because he says, here it is. He says this thing like a million times. But his greatest creation, as he loves to tell, was Fire for Fiddle, the Fiend of the Fell.
I think that's the title of his like big hit. I think.
Right. Which I get, but in the song, while watching it, I would tune in every time he would say that and be like, what is he saying? And it really is nonsense. Fire for Fiddle. But with his British accent says, powerful fiddle, the fiend of the fell. Like, what?
Well,
like it's pretty important, and I can't understand it every single time.
Yeah. Well, his accent definitely like does all that. I'm also convinced he was a little drunk on set.
Yes. And he was in on it. He had the twinkle in his eye, like we all know.
When he walks into the theater and he literally just goes meow 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 meow, like the thing like
his greetings.
Mm-hmm. His touch. Yeah. His cross paws. The thing is, like, about all the meows, like, no one really does them except for Ian McKellen and Idris Elba with the meow. So, like, it's crazy when people are just, like, normal, but, you know, just act like people. And then all of a sudden, Ian McKellen just comes on and he's like, meow, 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 meow. Like, it reminds you. Yeah, it's like, what? I don't. If it were consistent throughout the movie, maybe, I don't know. But this movie has no consistency. Beautiful Ghosts. I've now listened to this song 5 times. I do not know what it means.
Was this written for the movie?
Yes, by T-Swift.
Trying to get the... No.
Mm-hmm. T-Swift wrote the lyrics, and Angela Weber wrote the music. They were trying to get that Oscar nom.
Oh my God.
Best OG song. Yeah.
It's a tragedy.
did you steal that, or did you make that up?
I wish that I made it up. It's from... I don't remember what it's from. This is it. Oh no, it's from SNL. She's like, she's that the girl that you don't want to meet at a party. Cecily Sheldon's character. It's like, it's awful. It's a tragedy.
That is brilliant.
It's a great word.
I give you credit for bringing that to my attention. It's a tragedy. Ah, that's the one good thing that's come out of today.
It's
that word?
Majestic. It's majestic in its tragedy.
Exactly. That is. That is exactly what it means. I think I wrote it down. I was like, I don't know what this song means. I'm going to take a crack at it. It comes after Memory and Victoria are like into the world. I think it means, I'm sorry your life sucks now, but you once had good stuff. So yay.
in one sentence. Yeah. To describe it in one sentence, that works.
Yeah. But like, I feel like it's it's terrible to tell someone when they're down, hey, remember the good stuff you used to do? And now you're in a gutter? Like, fuck you. Fuck you, Victoria.
Yeah, she's like, at least you have things to look back on.
Yeah.
Because my only memory is a burlap sack. Essentially, is what she's saying, right? So yeah. Are we supposed to believe that Victoria is a kitten?
I think so.
Or cats? But she's also a full-grown woman and clearly the same age as all the other cats.
Yeah, she's like fully developed. Okay, maybe that's the backstory for Victoria. Okay, wait. Theory here.
Okay.
Victoria's a kitten. Like, the woman who threw Victoria out has a cat. That cat got super slutty and had a baby. The owner was like, I don't do no babies. It's like, it's one cat and we are a one cat household.
We're a one cat household.
And it's the 1930s, so like, fuck political correctness and like pounds and shelters. So she's like, easiest thing to do, tie this kitten up in a sack and throw it away.
Right.
Yeah. And maybe that's what that is. Maybe that's Victoria's backstory.
Hey, so all she has is a memory. It's like she was born, thrown in a sack, and thrown into the alley. That's it.
But then if I were Jennifer Hudson, I would have turned back around, strolled up to that little bitch, and been like, excuse you.
Literally every look she has in the movie, is just, please help me. Like, just, so, even when she's like, even when they're starting to take her in, she's like, is this real?
Jennifer Hudson, like, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
There's never a moment of like, it's just very one note.
She is the one cat though that isn't horny in this movie. So there's that.
Because she's had her days of horniness have passed her.
Yes. Her days in the sun, as are the lyric.
Right.
Even
right.
Judi Dench gets like her little horny leg.
The leg.
The leg just, lift.
Okay, that's her leg. I think that it is.
I think so. Yeah.
Beautiful extension.
Yeah, I mean, it's not completely straight, but she's like 80-something, so she's allowed.
Oh, we'll give it to her. I mean, even if she lifted it like 45 degrees, I would have been cool with it.
I think that could be the other tagline for cats. Cats, we'll give it to her.
We'll give it to her. We'll give her a cat.
I have catnip makes all the cats hornier than they already are, ?
Right,
like,
right.
Yeah, so.
Like, destructively horny. They were just like.
Yes, really just cool. Like you, crazy, crazy, in locked up in quarantine, horny.
Ooh, boy,
which you—I mean, you're married. You don't know what the struggle's like.
I can't. Yeah, I'm so sorry.
So yes, thank you. You are literally Victoria telling Grisabella, "I'm so sorry for you."
At least you have beautiful ghosts of your hookups past.
Oh, I want to punch you so bad. And then Taylor Swift comes down flying on a moon in kitten heels. Again with the puns. She's in sparkly kitten heels, catnip, making everybody horny. But like, I don't know exactly what the purpose then of the song is. It's just to announce that McCavity's there and he's the only contestant.
Well, so yeah, what I read in the synopsis on Wikipedia was that she comes to distract everyone so that everyone's so horny and so like spazzed out from the catnip that they can't. They're powerless to like make McCavity like get rid of him, essentially.
What synopsis did you read?
It was the summary, the plot summary on Wikipedia page for Cats the movie.
And it literally says makes everyone so horny.
Well, it doesn't say so horny. That's from our speculation.
I would have been so pleased if it had said that literally.
Oh my god, I wish. Here, I'm just gonna look for the exact line. The ball is interrupted by Femme Fatale, bomb ballerina, who performs a song and dance number dedicated to McCavity, a distraction to incapacitate the party with catnip. McCavity arrives demanding to be made the Jellicle choice.
Okay. I preferred your version.
Incapacitate.
Yeah, I preferred your version.
But she incapacitates them with horniness.
Indeed she do.
Haven't you ever been incapacitated with horniness? You're like, I'm too horny to function.
John, what did we just talk about with quarantine? That is really mean of you to say. That is like, right. God damn. Wow. Frank. But spoiler alert, guys, McCavity does not get to be the Jellicle choice. Then makes Deuteronomy disappear, but then somehow Mistopheles makes Deuteronomy come back.
Right, with his magic.
Yeah, but like, doesn't bring back the rest of the cats from the barge, because I guess they didn't realize those cats disappeared.
Right, I guess so, because McCavity was so sneaky.
Again, I wish this were visual because your face when you said sneaky made me giggle. But then like at the end of the movie, they show up at the end in like Kensington Square and all the cast are like, there you are. And I'm like, you weren't too worried about them when you were fucking at the Jellicle Ball. Nobody stopped in the middle of the Jellicle Ball to go, anyone see Rebel Wilson? She usually pegs me by now.
With her cat strap on.
With her cat strap on. I need to emphasize once again. So if it's, okay. I don't want to paint John as a hater for all of you who love him from his career and whatnot. You know me as a hater. We've tried to be balanced, but you also have to remember with this movie, hundreds and hundreds of people had to sign off on every single choice that was made. This had to get approved by so many people, people with very high pedigrees, and they all got paid for it. Everyone was compensated. So like we are allowed to critique some of these choices.
In a weird way, it feels like we're beating a dead horse, but I'm really glad that we're getting this out because I haven't fully been able to talk about this with anyone. Also, quick note, I had a thought during the movie, like, who was the CGI guy who was like, okay, the ear should go now, and then it should twitch now, and then we're just, let's do a couple more ear twitches here, just randomly. Who went through the whole movie and was like, okay, twitch now.
No. Well, that one I actually do wonder. I wonder if, like, Tom Hooper said, I want them to twitch every 17 and a half seconds. And so the CGI people were just like working so around the clock that it got to every time it got to 17 and a half seconds, they were like, well, it doesn't really work here, but Hooper said so. So yeah, okay, they twitch. Like,
yeah.
Like,
I was so distracted by it sometimes. I was like, oh, right, they're cats. Ears.
Yeah. Yeah, again, the realism of it all. It's like, it's just, or not even realism, because it's not realistic, but just like their commitment to getting things realistic in a way. It's what adds to the weirdness of it all. Okay. So you know how we talked about at the end of the show on Broadway, that claw came out through the ceiling?
Yeah.
Okay. So the plot of Cats is essentially, they all like figure out which one of us is going to get killed tonight.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that kind of makes it not creepy in the show is that when it happens, when they go to the heaviside layer, like a tire levitates. Tires don't levitate. So right. You know that like magic is happening.
Right.
And then, like, a giant claw comes out of the sky to like receive Grisabella. So you're like, oh, this isn't all in their heads. Like, this is a thing. Cats the movie. The first time I saw it, I didn't notice it, but there are cat eyes in the clouds.
Huh?
When the movie opens and then when it ends and Grisabella goes out into the sky, like there's a brief moment where, like, cat eyes like flash. It's very subtle because I didn't see it at first, but it's still too subtle because the thing is that in the movie, Grisabella goes to the heaviside layer in a hot air balloon. Sure. Now, I'm not a scientist. I did not go to school for science, but I'm pretty sure hot air balloons normally fly without magic. Yes?
Yes.
That is how they work. So it's not like a magical thing. Like, they are literally setting up a hot air balloon to take her up into the sky. And then she goes into clouds and there's nothing there to like receive her magically. So it literally just looks like they set her off to die.
Right.
They're like, yeah.
Good luck. Right.
I would have loved it if there was an extra shot at the end when Judi Dench is like, you really are a Jellicle cat, and like goes away. And then they cut to Grisabella in the hot air balloon, like, at the bottom of the ocean, dead. And there are hundreds of cat skeletons in hot air balloons, just dead.
Post-credits, like, this is it.
This is the heavyside layer. Like,
what happens?
The balloon runs up
air and crashes into the ocean.
100%.
Cats drown.
Cats is actually the sequel to All Dogs Go to Heaven, and it's All Cats Drown.
All cats go to the bottom of the ocean.
All cats go to the bottom of the Atlantic. That is exactly what it is. So we've come to the end of the movie, which means we should come to the end of the episode. What are your final thoughts now that we've let out all this energy in your brain from Cats?
Thank you. Thank you for helping me exercise these demons. Because at the end of the day, I still enjoyed the experience because there's something so fascinating about something so massive and something so expensive and with all this star power and all this star quality and all this hype, and it seems like, yes, like on paper this could have been really great.
Mm-hmm.
And like how things go wrong, you know, so it is like a case study of like how things with all the best intentions and like objectively very smart creative people can go awry.
Mm-hmm.
So I enjoyed like the attempts, and I enjoyed the commitment by the actors. And I was intrigued. It was like watching a car crash. It's like, how is it going to get better? How could it get worse? Oh my God, it just did. You know, it just keeps outdoing itself in the worst way.
Is there anything that's given you now that you're done with it? Like anything you're going to take away from it forever?
I'm going to take away that no matter how like important I think I am, even if I become, which would never happen, a dame or a knight, definitely won't become a dame. Well, you know, the jury's not out yet. But if I became a knight and I'm like one of the greatest actors of my generation, I could still be in Cats. You know, I could still mm-hmm. be in something like that. So it's like, it kind of helped me take myself a little less seriously. You know, it's like, we're all just actors, well, those of us who are actors. And it's like, yes, it's a noble, there's nobility to it in sometimes a very literal sense, but it's also like, sometimes you're a cat, you know, and you like, you meow and you drink milk from a saucer and you lick your paw and that's okay, you know?
Yes, I'm loving everything you're saying. John, where can people find you on the internet?
They can find me on Instagram at John A. Krause.
Mm-hmm.
I have some YouTube stuff. You can just type in John Krause. I'm working now in quarantine. I want to do more videos and I also write music and I'm trying to get like an EP together. So look out for that. But for now, Instagram is the best place to like
Perfect.
Follow me.
Yes. John, we close out every episode with a diva, with a Broadway diva. And as our guest, you get to choose the Broadway diva today.
Okay.
I have the list here. It's very long, so I'm not going to go through it all. But if you want to give me a couple of options, I'll let you know if we've done any of them.
Okay, well, this is someone who I think you could call her a diva now, but she's young. And I feel like she's on track to like be one of our great divas in the future, which I think is always important. God damn it, I'm so sorry.
You're fucking popular.
No, it's all bullshit. But Jessica Bosk.
Oh, wait. Did we do her? I don't think we have.
Because I've always thought, like, who's going to be, like, our, you know, our Bernadette, or who's going to be our Patty, you know, or whatever, or our Audra. It's like, these people are like, and to a certain degree, like Sutton Foster, I guess, could be considered a diva. She doesn't have like the diva mentality, I don't think, sure. But
like musical theater star, yeah.
Totally. But Jess has that kind of bravura and that chutzpah that makes a great Broadway diva.
Yeah. She is an alien, which is what I think the best Broadway stars are.
Yes.
So make some stars. That is a fantastic choice.
Thank you.
Right out the gate, picked a good one. So guys, thank you for listening. This is Broadway Breakdown. I am Matt Koplik. He is John Krause. Take care of your beautiful ghosts, guys. And cheers, Jessica Voss. Take us away, Jessica.
Cannot be torn apart. There is one thing that remains forever.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
It's time for today's Lucky Land Horoscope with Victoria Cash. Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.